From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
So many shrubs, so little time. I'm kidding, sort of, but I think shrubs are a gardener's best investment. And they're today's topic with my guest, the longtime plant hunter and plant breeder Tim Wood of Wholesale Spring Meadow Nursery. More in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com. Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/AwayToGarden.
Tim Wood, the product development and marketing manager for Spring Meadow Nursery, devotes his career to developing and identifying outstanding new woody ornamentals for the retail and landscape markets. He's here today to talk shrubs, what's new, what's coming next, and what's going out of favor and why. Welcome, Tim. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Well, it's great to be here, Margaret.
Yes, I'm a longtime fan, of course, of your work, so I'm happy to speak to you. So can you start by explaining briefly, kind of, because, you know, the listeners are home gardeners, and my readers are home gardeners. You know, they may not know what is a wholesale grower of liners of shrubs do. You know, what's Spring Meadow?
Yes, I think the best example is most people understand going to a garden center and buying a flat of annuals.
Yeah.
You know, 32 plants in a flat or something like that. Well, Spring Meadow, we sell flats of baby shrubs that have been propagated, and we sell them to other growers who then pop them up, and they grow them for a year or two, and then they sell them to a garden center, they sell them to a landscape pickup yard, or they sell them to a home improvement center.
Mm-hmm.
So we're a little bit at the very beginning of the process in terms of producing plants. And that's a really good kind of place to be for somebody who's interested in new plants, because it's very efficient for us to ship these baby plants across the country.
Mm. And so now you kind of are like a little bit of a scout, like you're always on the lookout for something that will eventually become something that's shipped around in the multiples to lots and lots and lots of wholesale customers. So you're at the very beginning of that process, right?
Yeah, our customers are always looking for something new, something better, and so that's why I was hired at Spring Meadow, is to basically be a plant hunter, mm-hmm. a plant breeder, but I'm also a plant advocate and a gardening advocate, but I'm always on the hunt for something new, something better when it comes to woody outdoor gardening plants.
Mm-hmm. And Spring Meadow is connected in some way to Proven Winners, which is a name that gardeners can't help but notice in the garden center. So explain that part of it.
Yeah, Proven Winners is a co-op brand, kind of like Ocean Spray Cranberries or Sun-Kissed Oranges.
Okay.
So in agriculture, a lot of times, you know, companies are not big, you know, big companies that can afford to do branding. And so we work cooperatively with other growers to sell our very best plants under this brand called Proven Winners. So we work on the woody plants. There are nurseries that specialize in perennials. They work on the perennial side of the Proven Winner brand. And there are annual companies that work on the annual side, and each of us is continually looking, evaluating, and testing, and selecting the very best plants that we can sell to consumers under this particular brand, Proven Winners.
Okay.
The idea is to make consumers successful at gardening and to get more people involved in gardening, because a lot of people are afraid of gardening. It's like going into a store and buying wine. You know, we don't always know what we're trying to choose to get the best wine, and it's very similar to for a lot of people to go out and buy plants.
Yeah. Now, yeah. in your personal career, Tim, how long have you focused on woody plants, on shrubs? How many years do you think?
Well, I grew up on a nursery growing woody plants on my dad's nursery, but I've been at Spring Meadow for about 23, 24 years. Mm-hmm. And before coming to Spring Meadow, I used to grow perennials, I used to grow annuals. I used to be more in the botanical garden curation business.
Right. So
as well.
So in that time, you know, so I've been gardening, I don't know, 40 years and I guess 30 years in my current space keenly. And I'm trying to think, you know, when I would go to the garden center back then, what were the first things that I bought, woody plants that I bought? I bought a magnolia, for instance, and I bought a, you know, I bought lilacs, you know. So then versus now, let's start to talk about some of the sort of changing landscape, like mainstays of then versus mainstays of now.
Yeah, I think just like fashion, you know, plants also come in and out of vogue.
Yeah.
And some of the things that, you know, that we grew 10 years ago are no longer popular. Some things that we grew, you know, 30 years ago, when I was growing up on my dad's nursery, you know, they went out of favor, but they're coming back. It's kind of like those neon green clothing that people wore in the 60s, you know, that they went away and they came back, and it's not all that different from plants. You know, we sometimes get into a new plant and we get bored with it, and then we move away from it, and then there's a whole new generation that discovers that plant again.
Mm-hmm. So,
and it comes back in fashion.
So, for instance, I saw in the catalog. I mean, it's not a catalog that I can buy from. It's a wholesale. It's pointed towards your wholesale customers. But looking at your website, at the Spring Meadow website, I saw, I don't know, it was like around two dozen maybe new plants for 2019. And I said, I thought, well, some of them I had never heard of. Well, I had heard of them, but I've never grown them because I'm in the wrong zone, like Coprosma, which I think is like a zone 9 to 11 plant. But I saw like there's a quote, new forsythia. And I thought, what the heck do we need more forsythia for, you know? But then there were some Japanese maples, and I thought, oh, right, they're hot right now. So tell me some specific things that have like gone out of fashion or are coming back around for their second, you know, showing, or, you know, give us some examples.
Okay, I think a really good example is beautyberry, Calicarpa.
Yes.
You know, it's a beautiful plant. I think a lot of gardeners that are a little bit more sophisticated, maybe some of the gardeners on the East Coast are familiar with beautyberry. But generally speaking, you don't really ever see it being sold anymore, and you don't really see it in the garden center because it doesn't look fabulous in the springtime.
Right.
And some of the old varieties were a little bit on the floppy side. So, you know, in the garden center world, and particularly having gone through this last recession, you know, growers are really looking for things that can, you know, make them money, and they retailers are the same way. They want to minimize the risk. They want things that will sell without having a person there to explain, like, oh, this is a beautiful plant. It's going to look great in the fall.
Right.
So beautyberry doesn't sell very well in the spring. And so we had a breeder that developed a Calicarpa that had, it's called Pearl Glam, and it has purple foliage.
Oh.
So now it's a plant that looks good in the spring as well in the fall. It looks good throughout the whole summer. And all of a sudden you have a plant that, you know, was kind of an old-time plant that, you know, maybe sophisticated gardeners knew, but most general public people didn't know. And all of a sudden, it's getting new life and getting popular.
I see, with a facelift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of times, when you find a plant that has one new attribute, it can give a whole new life to that particular genera and becomes popular again.
So, you know, sometimes the motivation for that is not just sort of the fashion issue, but it may be an environmental issue, a scientific, something we know now that we didn't know then, like, and I'm thinking of barberries, for instance, that were popular, and, you know, in English, you look in any old English garden book and there's barberries in every mixed herbaceous border, and, you know, they'll use them as the backdrop and colorful leaved ones and whatever. Well, then we have this problem with them sowing around and becoming invasive. But now something has happened to barberries to bring them around as a possibility again, yes?
Yeah, I mean, barberry is a really easy-to-grow landscape plant. It's very durable. It's very tolerant of a lot of urban conditions. And it comes in a lot of different foliage colors, so it's been quite popular over the years. And, of course, the issue of invasiveness and birds carrying the seeds into native habitats has been a real issue.
Yeah.
And so there are a number of plant breeders across the U.S. that have looked at this particular issue of invasiveness and have been breeding plants that do not set viable seed or very little viable seed. For example, we all are used to buying seedless oranges.
Yes.
We're used to buying seedless watermelons. And the breeding techniques that are used for those, creating those vegetables and fruits, they can be used for creating ornamentals that are not going to damage the environment.
That are sort of sterile, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
And so is there a series now of those that are, you know, the new generation of barberries that are not going to seed around? Do they have a name?
Yeah, we've introduced two new ones. They have been on the market for only 2 years, and that's from these baby plant sizes. So they're just starting to come into retail.
Yeah.
And there's two of them. One is called Sunjoy Mini Maroon, and the other one is called Sunjoy Toto.
Okay, so Sunjoy.
They're both dark, one's dark burgundy, and one is kind of more on the dark black side.
Mm.
And they are both plants that were developed to be environmentally friendly.
Mm.
And I think there will be other varieties of barberry coming out on the market as well that are sterile and not problematic.
I mean, that's just a really, that's going to be a great thing to have happen. I mean, that's such important work, because it's a shame that we can't ethically grow them in so many places anymore. In fact, some states have outlawed them, you know, have made them illegal to be sold and whatever. But boy, I would like to be able to know that we could ethically grow them again. So that's exciting. So it can be making a plant, so sort of the grail of what you're looking for is the new attribute, the beauty berry that has that extra something so that it looks good and shows off in the garden center over a longer period and in the garden as well. Or it can be something environmental, ethical/environmental, like with the barberry. So what are sort of the other things? I mean, I see, for instance, with hydrangea paniculata, it seems like there's 97,000 new varieties, many of which look like dumpy little mounds to me, and I get aggravated because I can't remember all their names and tell them apart, but whatever. What are we looking for? Are we looking for smaller because people have smaller gardens? Are we looking for things for containers because that's hot? You know, what are the things you're scouting for, the traits?
Yeah, I mean, I travel all over the world looking for plants, and I love plants. I don't think there is, in my mind, a bad plant. You know, there's bad uses, there's bad places to grow them. But I appreciate every plant and what they're, you know, there's a place for them, I think, somewhere. But it's not always in the garden. And
right.
I think that, you know, my job is to help gardeners with find good plants for their garden. And so, even though I go across the world looking at plants, I mean, most of them I don't want to bring home because I know that, you know, they're not going to be good garden plants, or they're not going to be plants that a grower can make money growing, or a retailer won't be able to sell them. But, I mean, you know, we're looking for things that plants that solve problems, and we're looking for plants that perform better for gardeners. We're looking, because we're selling under a brand, we're typically looking for plants that are adaptable and easy to grow that people are going to be successful with.
Right.
And we're looking for plants that are low maintenance. We're looking for plants that are disease resistant. We're looking for plants that have more color, you know, all multiple seasons of interest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you talked about forsythia a little bit earlier. You know,
yes.
I would love to find a forsythia, you know, with an attribute like really good fall color, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, in fact, we're evaluating some forsythia with really good fall color. And, you know, those are the kind of things. Can we take a plant that was once very one-dimensional, like forsythia, and give it multiple seasons of interest? And I love plants that I think everybody has so much room in their yard, and they want to, if they're going to devote space in their yard to a plant, they want it to really give them the most bang for the buck. Like you take a viburnum that would give you flowers, it would give you maybe glossy foliage, you're going to get fruit, and you're going to get fall color. You know, that's a plant that kind of earns its keep.
Correct, yeah.
And I think that, you know, we want to do that to plants. We want to find plants that earn their keep, whether it's a mock orange or whether it's a forsythia or whatever. You know, the more attributes and the more beautiful it can be, you know, throughout the season, the better. And I'm a really strong advocate of a plant should look good in the garden when it's not in bloom.
Yes.
You know, so most of the plants people buy because they're basing it on the flower. And to me, I want a plant that looks good when it's not in flower, because I know it's going to look good in flower, but it should look good the rest of the year, too.
Well, then that's that tension, though, with what you were talking about, is it needs to show off well in the garden center, often in spring when the highest foot traffic comes. So it's that tension between, you know what I mean? If it's not a spring flowerer, it's not going to look so good right then, and it needs to have that extra attribute, or structure, or colorful foliage, or something, to get bought to catch people's eyes. I guess
it is. You know, it's getting harder and harder to introduce and sell plants that don't look great in the spring, and that's kind of a shame.
No, it is a shame, and I you know, as a gardener for so many years. You know, I always say to people when I'm lecturing, I say, hey, when you get out of the car at the parking lot of the garden center in spring, I want you to cover your eyes and make a beeline for the desk, you know, for the cash register to someone in charge and say, and don't buy any of those things that are in bloom, because I bet you already have spring plants in your garden. And please, instead, I want you to go to the counter and say, where's the stuff that looked good in February and where's the stuff that looks good in November? Because it's not on display right then, right? But it exists, right? You know, there are witch hazels.
I had a friend who used to teach a lot of gardening classes, and he used to tell his class, go to the garden center every 2 weeks.
Yes. The whole...
Throughout the year.
Yes,
all
exactly.
Year long. Go every 2 weeks, and you will see which plants look good throughout the whole year.
Yes.
And I thought that's just so easy and simple way to make yourself a good gardener, is to find, you know, to find plants that make your garden look good year long.
Yeah.
Not just going in May.
Yeah. Is there pressure to find more native shrubs as well? You mentioned viburnum, for instance. You know, and some of our Asian viburnums are having some of those problems, like the double file is having some of the problems with potential invasiveness and whatever, like we saw with the barberries, not as severe, but whatever. And so, I mean, are people asking for our natives? And you mentioned problem solvers, and I noticed in the new listings there's a creeping, not creeping, but a prostrate, maybe low-growing aronia, chokeberry, is that what we say, chokeberry? Yeah.
Yeah, chokeberry.
Yeah, and actually I think it was bred by a friend's brother at UConn Stores, Mark Brand, is that right? Is that
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so are people asking for, and that's a native, so that's why I'm, you know, so it's a problem solver and it's native. Is that giving it, does that give things extra points if they're native these days?
Absolutely.
Okay.
People are looking for native plants. Sometimes there's advantages having natives, and I think that there's, you know, if someone is designing we have a nature reserve over down the road here, and you know, in front of the sign they have Japanese euonymus. You know, and how ridiculous is that, right?
Right.
They just don't even know what they're doing. You know, so it just doesn't make any sense to do that. But I understand, like, you know, there are urban environments, and there are certain plants that, you know, maybe there are native plants that, or even exotic plants that will do better in Brooklyn than, you know, some native things. So there's importance, I think in a lot of the genetics that we have available for us. For example, just, you mentioned viburnums. A lot of our native viburnums are actually affected by a viburnum beetle.
Oh, not that I've ever seen that in my garden. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. And so, I mean, breeders have the opportunity to
yes.
save some of our native plant viburnums by breeding techniques of using resistant varieties. And
yes.
sometimes there's an advantage of using some plants that are resistant, and we can solve those problems. We've seen it with things like dogwood breeding,
mm-hmm.
get rid of anthracnose.
Yes.
We've seen it with elm trees. So those are important tools, but native plants certainly, I think, are very popular right now. We're always looking for native plants. We're looking at our native flora. Last week, I was down in Florida in the Panhandle, you know, walking through the woods and looking at the native flora there. And I always try to walk through different native habitats to figure out, like, what is doing well and what plants are we overlooking as ornamentals.
Mm.
I think there's opportunities.
Mm. In the last several minutes, I wanted to ask you just to tell me about some of the things, you know, because you must just get, in some sense, it's like overstimulated by, you see just the world of plants year after year after year, you're seeing so many possibilities. But are there things that you just are so excited about or personal loves or anything you want to tell us about, you know what I mean, that feel like victories or on the horizon that are coming soon? Or
yeah, there, you know, we always kind of, what we do is we dream about different plants. I dream about different plants. That's kind of who I am. And for example, for years and years, I would say, we would say to ourselves, boy, wouldn't it be great if, and one of those wouldn't it be great if was, wouldn't it be great if we had an Annabelle hydrangea that didn't flop?
Yeah.
After a rain.
Yeah.
And we came out with one that has stronger stems. It's called Incrediball.
Right.
And it kind of solved that issue. But then we moved on and we said, wouldn't it be great if there was an Annabelle hydrangea that had, you know, pink flowers or red flowers or green flowers? And believe it or not, like probably about 8 years ago, a professor down in North Carolina developed a whole series of Annabelle hydrangeas called Invincible, a whole series of them with a whole array of colors.
Mm.
And I think it's just one of the most exciting things to happen in horticulture in years, because we all love, everybody loves hydrangeas, but we don't live in a mild climate like the Japanese, where they're native to.
Right.
Now we have a native species that's adapted to our difficult continental climate that most of us have. You know, we don't live in Seattle. If we don't live in, you know, Nantucket, we struggle getting, you know, our hydrangeas to bloom reliably. And
yeah.
all of a sudden, you know, hydrangea arborescens, our own native, comes in all these colors. And to me, it's just like, it's just going to make gardening fun for a lot of people.
Right. So that felt like a big victory.
It was a big victory.
Yeah. Where are you headed next in the last minute? Where are you headed next on your next adventure searching? Are you going abroad or around the country or?
You know, I got back from Germany about a week ago,
mm-hmm.
and then straight from Germany, I went to California, and then from California, I went to Florida.
Oh, my goodness.
Right now, I just want to stay in my office for a couple weeks before
okay.
I head out on the next trip. But I know I'm going back to Germany. I know I'm going back to the Netherlands. I'll probably go to Japan this year. But my schedule is kind of open right now. I'm a little bit trying to be flexible.
Got to do your spring cleanup in your yard, right, Tim?
You know, you had asked me earlier, you know, if there was, people always ask me, oh, you must have a beautiful garden. And it's like, you know, unfortunately, I travel so much,
yeah.
I really don't get to do a lot of gardening
yeah.
at home.
Yeah.
And my gardening is really done in our test garden here at the nursery.
Yeah.
I have help there.
Yeah.
I get to enjoy that.
Well, I enjoyed speaking to you, and I'm so glad you explained a little bit about kind of what the hunt is all about and what's coming next and what's on the horizon. So thank you so much, Tim Wood of Spring Meadow Nursery. Good to speak to you.
It was great talking to you too, Margaret.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books and gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com. Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaythegarden.
Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.